everybody. My name is Keith. I do a zine called Avow. And I'm going to read you about 40 to 45 pages of sonnets about my favorite current obsession, the history of rayon. So, bitch, yo. I'm just fucking with you. I do a zine called Avow, and the way I originally met Rob from the Taxpayers years ago was we both worked at a lot of literacy, after school literacy nonprofits for elementary school kids. And so at one of the places that I worked, this kid got in trouble, and I had to put him on timeout. And he was a fifth grader. And so he kind of needed to be separated from the group for a little while, and I said, all right, just write me a story. And he's like, what am I supposed to write about? You know, like this, like, oh, it's, you know, he's on his death knell or something. And I'm like, I don't care, just write about something. And so he did, and it was so awesome that I totally stole it. And here it is. See the lined paper and everything? I crossed out the name of our program, but that's it. Today was the day I hated the most. First, I had to stay in for first recess. Then I could not play basketball. Then at lunch, I had to share my licorice with some friend. Then I messed up my art. Then I came to blank, the name of our program, and got a red card, which is when you mess up. Then I have to write a story about something. When I get home, I will probably get in trouble. Then I'll get grounded. He's guilting the shit out of me. Then I'll get grounded. Then I will get yelled at. Then I will wish I was never born. Then I will get in more trouble. Then I'll wish I never go to blank name of the program. Then I will have a very, very, very boring day. That's three fucking varies. That is what I'm writing about. this other one, it was really cool to, everybody that has read has been awesome, and it was really cool to hear an electric fucking band after just hearing acoustic people for a week straight, you know? It's like, that was wonderful. And also, Steve reading fiction was fucking awesome, too. So, and it was rad because I feel okay about reading a little bit of the story, too. And so this is actually, it's pretty dark, you know what I mean? So this is about a son who's, he isn't sure if his mother has died accidentally in a car accident or if she's done it intentionally. And both he and his father are really struggling. And I like messing with very realistic, difficult situations and putting elements in them that are fantastic and still trying to convince you that it's possible, you know? So he enlists the help of his pot dealer to figure out the mystery, and then the pot dealer becomes possessed by a Ouija board. So, I think it fucking works powerfully, you know, but I don't know. So anyway, I'm going to read you a couple of quick chapters from that. She's crying already. So this is a story called All That Business with the Heart. It was summer and morning, and my hangover was manageable due only to its familiarity. Mornings have become little more than a silent cataloging of the usual sufferings. Lava compressed behind the optic nerve, light seeping acidly under the drawn shade, a mouth salted in ash and then glued shut. The room was dank and still and heavy with spent alcohol and sweat. My bones felt hollowed out, filled with spun glass, and even that singular moment of inertia and fear between waking and sleep, that sense of falling as I writhed against the bedsheet was commonplace these days, almost comforting for its normalcy. My father lay splayed out in his easy chair as if he'd been shotgunned. His snores were drawn out in dramatic sheets being slowly ripped by a strong man. His fingers drummed on the armrests of his chair as he dreamed whatever visions were afforded him. In the horizon of bottles on the table level with my eyes, I lay on the couch, looked like some kind of imbecilic skyline, the high-rise of a city crafted by idiots. This is apparently how we had chosen to grieve, my father and I. A lone fly perched on the lip of a bottle on the table, and I reached a trembling hand over it and clicked the glass, and the fly buzzed away. I rose from the couch on shaking legs and saw my father had passed out holding his eyeglasses in one hand. I gently took them, set them on the table. He slept sweating and open mouth, his eyes pinched tight, a man yelling silently in his sleep. His jowls were loose, the stubble on his face turning gray. I got up, cleaned the kitchen, drank glass after glass of water, chewed 3 aspirin and went to the bathroom and brushed my teeth. Occasionally my father moaned or cursed in the living room. We had started this routine in December, he and I, 2 days after Christmas, actually, and it was July now. For 6 months, we had drank each other to sleep most nights, spending the hours talking about everything but her. Every room in the house abounded with her ghost. Every room sat heavy with our inanity, our wordlessness. We were not ready to talk about her, so we drank. Or we drank, so we weren't even close to ready. Wait, so we weren't even close. We weren't even ready to talk about her, sorry. And fuck it, it was an equation too steeped in the heart's workings to figure out with a hangover anyways. I had come home from school for Christmas break, and I'd never left. I stepped down to the porch, the day's humidity already pressing down like a damp cloth over the world. I lit a cigarette and took a drag, took another, lurched down our steps and vomited as discreetly as possible in the rose bushes dying in front of our house. Just got one more chapter here. My father was awake, sitting in his chair when I came in the front door with 2 cups of coffee. He swiped his hand down his face as if he'd been crying, and I handed him a cup, looking away. I opened the shade with a clatter, and my father leaned back, his hand over his face. The sun fell across his chair, and I half expected him to start smoking and hissing. He'd spent January and February in grief counseling before claiming his counselor still pined for his own mother, and had stopped going. Besides haphazardly working the garden out back, he only left the house these days to go to the liquor store down on Broadmoor and occasionally play chess in the park with Morty Bendelson, another English teacher from the community college my father had worked at since before I was born. Jesus Christ, Dustin, a little warning. Sorry, I said. I made breakfast, putting aspirin next to my father's plate as if they were vitamins. He picked up the rest of our beer bottles and folded his blanket over the back of his chair. He stepped in the kitchen, looked at the eggs and toast I was making, and moments later, I heard him quietly retching in the bathroom. We ate slowly, my father resting his head on one fist. The kitchen, with its tiny half-circle of a sunroom that overlooked the backyard, had always been my mother's favorite place in the house. Her memory there clamored and banged against the walls. The muddy oil painting of a picnic basket laden with deformed fruit that hung above our heads, she painted that in college. Her library books, 6 months overdue now, sat stacked upon each other, the top covers rhymed in dust. I'd memorized the titles. We sat, a husband and son, laden with her artifacts, the proof of her leaving. I'd gone into their bedroom once on some errand last winter, the room heavy with the very weight of her. Her absence had still felt cuttingly new then. By January, my father rarely went in there for more than a change of clothes. Her dresses, her blouses and skirts hung dimmed in the shadows. I'd shut the closet door, feeling the door and its crack quietly thrum under my fingers. I understood why my father didn't want to sleep in there. Just seeing her clothes lined up in the thin, spiteful wash of daylight, and I felt good about it. Just shutting that closet door felt like it was my first step toward some kind of movement. Later that day, I'd been out in the back patio smoking a cigarette, and I'd just smoked a joint in my bedroom minutes earlier, and I was high, which had so quickly become a welcome and desirable thing to be. I'd been thinking about how I needed to go to Honey's to buy more weed, or I was thinking about my mother, or shit, I was just most likely thinking of very little. And my father had opened the sliding glass door and walked up beside me. He jiggled the change in his pockets and cleared his throat. I was in a lawn chair under the eave looking at the remains of my mother's garden. Stakes in the dark earth out there leaned lopsided in the mud. Coils of wire to keep animals from eating the plants lay flung castaway in the weeds. The gutters were thick with dead leaves and rain fell in strings in front of where I sat. My father cleared his throat again. I looked up at him, expecting something about the pot, almost welcoming it. something to get us both laying things out in the open, the definitions of things, the moments when we each had become stuck in this limbo, this odd, halting half-life that was supposed to be healing but was anything but. I was 21 years old, and then suddenly, within the walls of our grieving, become my father's equal. Both of us adrift and achingly lost. I was dying for some kind of definitive statement from the man. I wanted to fight with him. Did you close the closet door? He looked down at the yard, squinting. I said I did, yeah. He cleared his throat again. Don't, he said. His eyes, red-rimmed and weary, found mine for a moment and skated away. Just leave it as it is. He jiggled the change in his pocket again and went back inside. Thank you very much. My favorite band in the world is up next. So I think we should all get very excited now. Here we go.
All right, yes.
Then they'll rock, like, something wild. Thanks.
Oh,